Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
That's right, good Thursday evening, not Friday. Welcome into Chase and TD.
Here in
I know. Throwing it out, you know, it's making it different. Christmas week is throwing everything off, but Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport here with you. Yes, we are on tonight instead of tomorrow because of Nashville Predators coverage, which we will have during this time. So we did not want to rob the people of Chase and TD and Calvin behind the glass. So we are doing it tonight to talk about the Tennessee Titans and the all-important win and you're in game against the Houston Texans. It all comes down to one game, and if they win for the fourth straight year, they are 9-7, but they will be playing in the playoffs. But first, we must discuss a loss to the New Orleans Saints, two in a row for the Tennessee Titans. But look, I'm gonna look at this loss and I'm gonna say all losses are not fun. You don't want to lose. However, they put up 28 points. Just the defense couldn't quite hold the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees down. They had 10 more points, so they win 38-28. But there were some good things to take away considering they didn't have Derrick Henry. He was inactive. Khalif Raymond got just destroyed, knocked out on a missed call that we will definitely get to. There were definitely some things that didn't go their way. But here we are. So now 8-7 on the year, looking for that 9-7 as they take on Houston.
Yeah, and I tell you, you don't want to be one of pulling out a bunch of moral victories and those type of things. End of the day, the objective is to win the game. But I think there are some good things that you could pull from the game. Mike Vrabel said it himself on Monday when we asked him about that. So it's just one of those games that kind of – they can spin it forward, right, into this Sunday. That's, hey, listen, man, it's do or die.
Yeah.
Win or go home, go hard or go home. It's a big-time game. But I just think the fact that they hung in there with the Saints, had a really good shot at winning the game.
They did.
I think that's really good. And when you look at this team, right, who would have ever thought that this team was capable of being in a shootout with Drew Brees, Mike Thomas, Alvin Kamara, and that New Orleans Saints offense?
First of all, congratulations to Michael Thomas for breaking Marvin Harrison's record. Pretty cool to say that happened here in Nashville. You knew it was going to happen eventually, but he had 12 receptions for 136 yards and a touchdown, targeted 17 times by Drew Brees. But you're right, the Titans hung tough. And we're not in this for moral victories. Look, I'm gonna give a criticism to Ryan Tannehill. This is something that really stood out to me in that loss to the Saints. Teron, he's holding on to the ball too long. I mean, the offensive line has had their ups and downs this year, but I think as of late they've played a lot better, especially since he took over. But 5 sacks on the day. Now, I'm not putting all of those on Tannehill, but there were definitely some where even the commentators are saying he's got to get rid of the ball.
Yeah, he was holding on to the ball a little long. I will say this, though. Taylor Lewan had a rough game. I'll put it to you that way. Yep. He had a rough game. Now, was he responsible for all the sacks? No. But was he responsible for all the pressure? No, but he had a rough game. And here's the thing. Neither you nor I hesitate to praise Taylor Lewan when he does well. So we're going to balance this thing out because what we always do is be objective. I mean, dadgummit, earlier this week, I was critical of
Kevin
Byard.
I mean, I was
Kevin
ready
Byard.
To bench him for a little
you
bit.
You know what I mean? So if I could be critical of KB, I could be critical of Lewan. I don't know about benching him. I don't know about going that far, but his play was definitely a part of this whole thing with Tannehill. And you're right, he held on to the ball too long. But to Tannehill's credit, he was able to find a way to get open, you know, as far as his receiver get open, and he found a way to extend the play. So,
Teron, there's only one player on this roster that we're not allowed to be critical of, and everybody knows who that
hey,
is.
Hey, listen, so. I'm not even going down that road.
I'm just saying.
We'll talk about the guys that were playing on this past Sunday. And I tell you, Marshawn Lattimore and A.J. Brown, that was a very intriguing matchup.
And that was respect by the Saints. No, and I mean that, like, it truly was respect.
Yeah.
To put Marshawn Lattimore, who's one of the best corners in the league, put him on A.J. Brown, and it worked.
And that's something that we talked about. You know what I mean? This is going to be the gauge to see where the NFL feels A.J. Brown is, right? And we're going to get into that a little bit later. I think we should get into that. The fact that they had the number one on him was significant, but what happens when you have a number one, like a lead corner, on your lead receiver? Somebody else has to step up.
Yeah.
Who stepped up?
For the Tennessee Titans, it was Tajae Sharpe.
I agree. And there were different things that he was able to do, and quietly – he and Janoris Jenkins, they were going at it. I saw Janoris get away with a hold on one of them. I think Tajae was beating him pretty well. But he had two touchdowns, and both of those touchdowns I thought were really good plays, really good examples of the feel that he has for the position, and also the feel and the rhythm, how in sync he and Tannehill are. And actually, because – of the holiday, we didn't get into talking with TD. We're going to do this first hour is going to be the Talking with TD show. So naturally, a part of what we do, because you see this a lot, you know what I mean, you see a lot of I don't want to say duplicating, because you can't duplicate what we do, but you see an attempt to replicate it, right? But
right,
we give you the real breakdown. So let's go ahead and get into the Tajae Sharpe both touchdowns that he had for Talking with TD.
I wanted to go over this with you because I really like the way you were able to come open. You know what I mean? It wasn't planned, so to speak, but it resulted in two touchdowns, you know. So can you just kind of take me through what happened on these?
Yeah, so, man, on this play, I'm just blocking. I'm supposed to be pinning the DN. But before the play, they was kind of calling it out. So they was expecting the toss crack. If you kind of look at it, the linebacker, they didn't even, you know, respect the action in the backfield. They kind of just shot right out. So, you know, it was really just a cluster on the front side. So, man, I'm just trying to get out and just find any type of open space I can, you know, just to be available for the quarterback to hit me. And, you know, Ryan did a great job of, you know, just keeping the play alive. And, you know, he wound up finding me on the back end, man. And, you know, I just wound up, you know, coming out the backside for a touchdown.
Now, is that something that you guys have, not this particular, but just in general, the QB scramble drill, do you guys spend time working on that?
Yeah, obviously, you know, we talk about it, but, you know, on that play specifically, man, you know, we never, you know, talked about, like, a scramble drill on that, or, you know, something may happen, but it's just kind of, you know, just playing football.
Yeah, so it's kind of feel.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You know, just turning into kind of some, you know, backyard football, just kind of get open, and, you know, that's what it ended up being.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now, this is the other touchdown you had, you know what I mean? So that toe tap that we talked about before, but can you take me through this one? Because this was another off-schedule one.
Right, yeah. So on this one, I really just got a dart route, so I'm supposed to sit down and, you know, get a DB a little move and just come back flat across the goal line. But, you know, as I seen the play develop, you know, I seen Ryan scrambling to the left, and, you know, I seen it was a couple guys that was toward the front of the end zone, so I kind of just tried to make my way towards the back end zone and just find a little open space. And, you know, Ryan did another great job of, you know, just extending the play a little bit, and, you know, he threw me an excellent ball where only I could get to it, and, you know, I just found a way to come down with it.
And you got that one on Janoris. I know you're not going to say it, but I saw it. He was talking a little bit, so I'm sure it was good to get that touchdown.
Yeah, you know, they was out there doing a little chirping, man, but, you know, it's all good. It's part of the game, man. It's one of the things you love about it. So, you know, it is what it is.
Cool.
Appreciate you. There you go, Tajae Sharpe, the play breakdown that you usually hear on Talking with TD. This week, the first hour is Talking with TD. So, good stuff. Look, I said this a few weeks ago, and you and I have agreed on this. I know you can't re-sign everybody that's going to be a free agent, and you obviously have a checklist that you have to go down, a priority list. But in my opinion, Tajae Sharpe has played his way to another contract.
Yeah, without a doubt he has. And the thing is, it's going to be a reasonable deal. That's the thing that's key today. You're getting a player you know can be successful, has a role in your scheme, and will be a reasonable, I don't want to say acquisition because you already have him, but it'll be a reasonable renewal, so to speak. So, yeah, definitely. And
then your top four receivers are intact.
Yeah, and the thing is, those two touchdowns, they were on third down. And that's another part of the transformation this team has made under Tannehill. They've become a better team on third downs. It's a collection of reasons, but a guy like Tajae Sharpe is one of them. And to be honest with you, last year Tajae was a specialist on third down as well. He had that streak. I think it was like 15 catches. Consecutive catches were for first down. So he's a guy that's familiar with moving the chains for them.
Yeah, and I like him in this scheme. I mean, it just works. I mean, he's played his way into this situation, and with Adam Humphries out, as we mentioned, Tajae Sharpe is a go-to guy. That's why you have guys like that on the team, and also, you know, certain situations they've used him in all year long. I mean, we saw it in training camp, and that was somebody that you and I talked about quite a bit, of really showing us, okay, he's, you know, he deserves to be here. Because there was a time where there may not have been a spot for him. And now he has worked his way into, I think, being deserving of another contract. When we come back, the Houston Texans, we will get a look at things behind enemy lines. Aaron Wilson will join us. He works for the Houston Chronicle. We'll talk to him next. Here on Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah.
This is J.M. Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
We're back. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport here with you on a Thursday as we get ready for the Houston Texans, the final game of the regular season. If the Titans win, they are in. The Texans, of course, have already clinched the AFC South. So let's say hello to Aaron Wilson that covers them for the Houston Chronicle. Aaron, how are you?
Great. How you doing?
Doing well. And I'm going to start with this because I know coaches always are truthful in press conferences and they never play anything close to the vest. They give you guys all the answers, and that's exactly what Bill O'Brien has done. It seems like he's going to play to win. He's not going to rest anybody. They're going to go out and try and beat the Titans. You buying that?
Somewhat. The fact is, nowhere has he said that he's playing everybody. He just ducks that question.
Right.
He just, playing to win could mean resting people and still just trying to win with the players that you have out there. I mean, I think you never attempt to lose a football game. So technically, is he being accurate? And yeah, I guess he's just not being forthcoming, and he refuses to be cooperative when it comes to that topic, or J.J. Watt, like on Monday when they knew they were going to activate him the following day, and he stonewalled on those topics. So I have no idea why that is, but you'd have to ask Bill O'Brien. But yeah, as far as what will happen, you know, Deshaun Watson, who's the main person you would want to rest, he said that he expects to and wants to play in the game. So it's not up to him. It's up to one man, Bill O'Brien, and we'll see what he does on Sunday. But I do think there's a possibility that certain players, including Watson, Laremy Tunsil, and DeAndre Hopkins, could be rested for this game or play sparingly. I think that's a very real possibility, if it has no playoff stakes, which it very well might not. You know, in talking to some of the players, they all say all the right things, including some guys like Tayshaun Gibson. He said they'd like to be the Grinch and crush the Titans' dreams and keep them out of the playoffs. So he sounds fired up about it. I have a different opinion on, and a lot of people think, well, this game doesn't matter, you need to rest. I don't look at it that way. I think that they absolutely need to play better football, regardless of whether this game matters. They're not playing that well. They're sloppy on offense, and they need to play much better football to, you know, do something in the playoffs. That's what the goal should be. And if this game, you know, takes something of a toll on you, that's what happens. But it's really hard to just say you turn it on and off like it's a water faucet when you want to try. I mean, they're not that good to be talking about taking time off, I think. I mean, they're not the Ravens. They haven't really earned taking time off, in my opinion.
How much of that, Aaron, do you think will have to do with the outcome of the Chiefs game, which is earlier in the day? If the Chiefs win, then they lock up the third seed. The Texans will be the fourth seed no matter what. But if the Chiefs were to lose, then the Texans have a chance to move, you know, to change their seeding, move up to the third seed. Do you think that Bill O'Brien is really looking at that and that helps him decide what the game plan is?
I think that he has more than one contingency based on Chargers winning or losing. And yeah, I think that he'll have one game plan where, not where maybe he's benching guys, but maybe he's pulling guys after a while. And I can see that happening where he has a quick hook for selective players. But, you know, I mean, you only have 53 players mm-hmm. on the roster. You only have 46 up on game day. So there's not so much, there's only so much you can do as far as playing a ton of backups. And I think people have a kind of a unrealistic view of what can be done to rest starters. You have to pick which guys. And then for a coach like him that actually cares about this, when you start putting certain players in different categories of who's important and more important, it kind of gets away from the team concept, including, like, for example, J.J. Watt had a whole press conference on Christmas Eve, and that was originally going to be a day off for players from media, and they were going to work, but it was going to be closed, and then we were going to come see them on Thursday. But it being J.J. Watt, it was special circumstances. But I don't think he was a fan of that. I think that he is laser-focused and concerned about how they're playing and wants to right the ship heading into the playoffs. So that's where some of his attitude, I think, comes from. Is fact is, they're not playing real well, and he'll readily acknowledge that.
Yeah, and that's better. That's a good point, too. That's something actually I mouthed to Chase as you were just coming on was, okay, we need to talk about this team and how spinning it forward, you know, winning this game would spin them forward into the playoffs with some momentum. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Now, you mentioned also J.J. Watt coming back. What is it? Is there a different energy that he gives this team? What is it? Obviously on the field, but what is it that he brings in addition to that?
Right. In terms of on the field, you know, he gives you a dominant pass rusher and run stopper that has to be accounted for. He was the most double-teamed guy in the league prior to his injury. And even if he's not 100%, which he will not be, it still adds this element that you have to account for, and it frees other guys up, like Wendy Merciless and Jacob Martin and Brennan Scarlett to do some damage. And their defense is pretty ordinary without him. You know, they have a few timely plays, and they play well together, but there's no world beaters in the front seven with the exception, I guess, DJ Reader and Zach Cunningham. But it's not a outstanding, stellar defense without Watt, especially since they traded Jadeveon Clowney for peanuts. So when you look at them, I really feel like with him, he's a leader and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But they'll be a little bit fired up. I mean, they're getting Watt back for the postseason right when they need him because the pass rush has been terrible without him. And guys have had to cover for too long, and it exposes some of the deficiencies they have in the secondary at the cornerback position. So having Watt back gives them a shot in the arm. And I'm sure emotionally, it's hard to gauge this, but I'm sure emotionally they'll feel it too.
Yeah, good point there. In talking to the Jaguars, I always get the like when talking to their players about Derrick Henry, I always get the vibe that it's a real personal thing. Obviously, he has his best games against them, but when you talk to the guys in that locker room in Houston, what's some of the feedback that you get about Derrick Henry?
A lot of respect for him and the way he plays, his physicality. And some of these guys, and I don't know if you've seen some of the photos that have been posted, some funny ones of Tayshaun Gibson being stiff-armed by him or kind of looking awkward trying to tackle him when he was with the Jaguars and Derek was in his first few seasons in the league. I feel like they know that he's a powerhouse and that he can run you over. So they talk about gang tackling. They say all the right things about him. And I don't really sense that it's very chippy with him. I've never really seen a lot of pre- or post-snap stuff with him and the Texans guys. I think they look at him as you know, it's a long day against him, and you better bring your hard hat, because otherwise you can get embarrassed. I mean, like I mentioned, you know, Tayshaun, I'm on the internet because he had a few spicy quotes today about wanting to play Grinch, and all these Titans fans are posting pictures underneath my tweets of, you know, Gibson getting stiff-armed, and another one I can't really say on the radio what they said it looks like. It just looks bad. But, yeah, they know what he's about. I mean, this is a grown man.
Yeah.
You better bring it or you're going to get embarrassed.
We're talking to Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle, covers the Texans for them. Now, it's always interesting to talk to people in Houston because – Bill O'Brien, you look at it, I mean, he's had one losing season since he's been there. He's won the division four times, including this season. They get to the playoffs. They don't win in the playoffs. He's won one playoff game since he's been there. And I know a lot of fans are kind of tired of that. So how do you view the importance of this upcoming playoff run for Bill O'Brien and potentially his future? I'm not saying he's getting fired if they lose in the first round this year, but just moving forward.
It's important because they made this whole year a win now mode with him operating as a de facto general manager, and yeah, to come up short and just to be out of the playoffs right away, like they're playing Buffalo, and you know, it's a game that's it's winnable. It's not a lock that they win it, but they could win that game. And if they lay an egg against the Bills, I certainly don't think he's being fired. I do think that it could make next season something of a referendum on whether they should keep him. But the owner is very patient and has a lot of faith in him. And how the fans feel is really immaterial. It's how the boss feels. And he believes in Bill and has given him all the clout that he could want as a head coach.
And Will Fuller, he's a really good player, obviously a guy who has his share of injuries. So you've seen this team play without him in the lineup. How much does that offense really change when Will Fuller is not out there on the field?
I mean, they're not very dynamic without him. I know they have Kenny Stills and he's fast, but he's not like Fuller where he really takes the top off the defense. I feel like without him, they're not the same. He's not playing this week. He may not play again this year. I mean, he's, you know, no guarantees he's back for the first playoff game or even the second one if one happens. So, yeah, it's just he's 4.28 in the 40. And this guy's just like shot out of a cannon. And it's so much different from DeAndre Hopkins in terms of style of play. And he also has pretty good hands and runs some good routes. He's become a very complete receiver. So not having him, it's a loss. Can't underrate what it means. I think if they could do it again, they would have maybe had him sit out even longer to try to get that hamstring right. But he's going to need a lot of time this offseason to get his body right.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, like you said, he is a really good player, you know, and not having him in the lineup, I'm sure, is not going to be good for this Texans team. Aaron, before I let you go, man, I just want to, as I always, you know, tell you, I appreciate everything you've done for me. Aaron, folks, is a guy who took me under his wing in Baltimore. I was out there, didn't have a clue what I was doing. He showed me the way, man. So I always had to give you props for that, man. You're like a big brother, man. I always appreciate that.
Oh, man, I appreciate you too, man, and happy holidays to you. You knew what you were doing. You just needed people to believe in you and give you the chance, and you've made all this happen for yourself. Going from there to Philly and now Nashville. I'm real proud of you, and I'm not surprised at all. I think this is just you doing what you were always capable of. So, yeah, just keep it up, man. Just you're doing amazing, and you're going to continue to thrive.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Have a good night.
All right, Aaron. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon. Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle. Always appreciate him taking the time. A lot of stuff there. Look, I think the Bill O'Brien conversation is an interesting one because I told you this a few weeks ago. We talked to Sean Salisbury, who does radio there and obviously a former quarterback, but he said it's the craziest thing. This guy wins. He wins the divisions, and everybody wants him fired. I mean, that's just it. Like, the fans want him gone. But he wins. It's just, can he win in the postseason and bring that ultimate prize to Houston? That's obviously what everybody is hired to do. When we come back, though, they got a pretty good quarterback, Deshaun Watson. We saw him just 2 weeks ago. The pass rush, we'll discuss that when we come back. It's Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
We're back. Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Always have a musical theme.
It's Mobb Deep this week, man. Mobb Deep, M-O-B-B. That's a part of the pregame track right there, too.
I like it. That's good stuff.
Yeah. That Mobb Deep gets you going, make your blood flow a little bit faster.
Yeah, and when that's what you're looking for with the pregame mix.
That's right.
That you got going on. I appreciate Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle for joining us. So we saw it 2 weeks ago, and you and I discussed this on this show and also on the midday show. But look, the Titans' pass rush got to Deshaun Watson. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't bring him down. He was able to make plays. Now, again, there's the question, will he play at all, the whole game, you know, what's going to be his availability. But how can the pass rush finish the job?
Yeah, first off, I want to just kind of co-sign with you on this issue.
Yeah.
Right? Because they were getting pressure. The pass rush was there, but they just couldn't finish the job.
If
like
you
said
that they weren't getting pressure, you weren't watching.
You weren't watching because Deshaun Watson was running for his life back there. And it just – they weren't able to close the deal.
Yeah.
And that was a problem. I saw – Daquan Jones on one of his reps, man, he grabbed, I don't know, whoever, that 76, he grabbed him and threw him aside and went in there, and he and Simmons were there, and they kind of tripped over each other as Watson made a move to get outside. It just, that's what killed them. So how do you get, we're going to sound like a broken record because we talked about this last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or 2 weeks ago, we talked about it. Getting the interior pass rush, which they had on that particular play, but you got to match that with both sides, man. It's just you got to suffocate him within the pocket. That's really the bottom line. But I will say this. Another way that they could get that pass rush better and make it get home, Harold Landry, he has to step up this week.
I agree. I mean, look, he's been the guy, and so he's going to have to play like the guy. I mean, we've talked about him perfecting his moves and things like that, but I agree. Jeffrey Simmons will continue to come into his own. Jarrell Casey, we know what he can do. Kamalai Correa has been an awesome, I'm not going to say surprise, but just an awesome addition over the past couple seasons to this defense. But he's really blossomed this year.
Right, and the thing is with Kamalai, if you go back and you watch him in college, I always remember, and even when Calvin mentioned what one of the guys he went to high school with. What did I say? What number did he wear? Because I didn't have a clue who he was until numbered, and Calvin mentioned something, and that made it click. So I just remember Kamalai is number 8, right, at Boise State. And he was a beast from the outside. He went to Baltimore. They moved him to inside linebacker. He struggled. The year that he got traded for, you saw him – kind of get into his mix.
He's a healthy scratch a lot of times. I mean,
right, but I'm talking about that training camp before the Titans traded for him. He was actually playing pretty well. He had a really good game. It was against the Bears in the I think it was the Hall of Fame game. Anyhow, he's coming into his own, and that's a really good thing. They're getting more and more help from the outside, right, because Reggie Gilbert was inactive.
Mm-hmm.
Sharif Finch was released. Open the door for number 50. A guy we've talked about on this show multiple times.
Somebody, we were doing our 53-man rosters. He was hovering around right there.
Yeah. I couldn't
Vrabel
leave
him
off.
Too.
Vrabel loves him. And that's when we had Dean Pease today, his presser. I asked Dean Pease just like, what is it that allowed him to just – get into this comfort zone, and Dean Pease being the coach that he is. Oh, and I wouldn't say he's in the comfort zone, but he's playing well. I want more.
Yeah.
But he said that Mike Vrabel would always bring him up. You know, hey, look, this guy, you know, this guy, this guy. And then they saw him do really well as a scout team.
Yep.
Edge rusher. So that helped. He had 2.5 sacks, man.
Hmm. Think there's a reason he wears number 50?
Hey, look, it works. Whatever number he's wearing, it works.
I think Vrabes might have said, put the 5-0
on him. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good one. I didn't catch that. Yep. Good correlation right there. But yeah, I mean, you definitely see a lot from him. And that's something that you – Emory Hunt, the best talent evaluator out there, that's not a GM. I put him against anybody. And he put me on to him when he saw the Roberson sign here. I remember the text message. Hey, man, that guy, he's legit. And then he shot me the video talking to him at the Shrine Week. You know, and it's funny, after the game, I mentioned that to him. He remembered that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that lets you know. I want him to remember my conversation with him, though. No, just kidding. But we had him. He's the subject of our defensive talking with TD. So we're going to go ahead and get into Derek Roberson and two of his 2.5 sacks.
First and foremost, I asked Coach Vrabel, or actually Dean Pease, about you. And he said that Coach Vrabel really talked to him a lot about you. He felt that you were standing out on scout team, and that kind of led to you getting more reps with the actual team defense. How has that whole process progressed for you?
I mean, I was on scout team all year, you know, just going against all lines, just giving a good looks. I mean, I was going against Taylor Lewan every day, so, you know, beating him on scout team, that's some people don't see during practice, you know. So just stuff like that just stood out, I guess.
Gotcha, and that kind of helped you, along with just being here,
get into
a comfort zone, but into a group.
Yeah, just being here, just in the group, you know, just still learning the plays, being in contact.
Now, this is the first set. I'm going to tell you, I love the way you dip coming off the edge. You know what I mean? You close really well. I know it's a special sack for you, but because it's your first one. But can you just take me through, like, what happened here?
Oh, yeah, so boom. You know, I was reading the ball. As soon as the ball snapped, I just got off the ball. And then I just knew I could jump step. You know, I knew I'd just get off the edge because, you know, a lot of old linemen in this league, they don't want to cross their feet just like he did right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as soon as I got it, 2-3 steps, and on the third step, I seen him shoot his hand. So as soon as I seen that, that's when I swiped down. And then I swiped down his hands. But I could have did a better job of reaching with the far arm. I could have came a little bit more free. I probably could have got a strip sack instead of coming and see on this one. See how we're coming around my arm. See how it reached a little bit more, and I probably could have got a strip sack.
Gotcha. Now, is that something that you've actually seen transfer from practice?
Yeah.
Because it seems like Coach Bowen works on that, you know, using your hands and freeing yourself.
Yeah, we always, it's probably one of the first things we work on when we go to practice. So, I mean, it was kind of like, all right, let's do this. And Coach and then, like, come to y'all something, do stuff we do in practice, doing in the game, that they can see them having on film.
And coaches love that.
Yeah.
You already know. All right, so this is going to be the next one, which was a near safety.
Oh, yeah, this one we had a game to the left. But it kind of helped us out with the tight end motion in. Kind of chipped me because he kind of, like, pushed me to my path while I was going. So I just kind of used his momentum to get to the A-gap. And then I seen that the guard is supposed to come off on me late, but he kind of did, you know, thanks to JC occupying the guard. And then, you know, I just looked around and came free.
And then just close. Last thing. I know Drew Brees, well, really the Saints. Now my daughter's dancing at Christmas. Really the Saints themselves, you know. I know that getting your sack against them had a different meaning.
Right.
Why is that?
Because, I mean, growing up, I'm from Las Vegas, so you never really had, like, a football team except for, like, the Raiders. But I always grew up a Saints fan, you know, because of Reggie Bush. So being able to, you know, I used to always play with Reggie. I used to always play with Reggie Bush and Drew Brees on Madden. You see, new Madden come out, soup up there, you know, put the Raiders in 99, everything like that. So just be able to play against Drew Brees or the Saints was kind of like a dream. So just go out there and capitalize on what you can get.
What would you say is the biggest difference between Derek Roberson in August and you now?
Oh, I'm hungry. You know, I got an opportunity, so I'm not going to let it take.
If you're nice, I'm
appreciate it.
The play breakdown, Derek Roberson, as you usually hear on Talking with TD. This first hour is kind of the Talking with TD this week. Rate, subscribe, review on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and all that. You get Chase and TD and Talking with TD.
Yes, sir. I like the way he was able to break some of the things down that he did. When you look at a guy in his second game being used in those games up front, like he was used, and getting a sack from it, I think that was really good. And the way he explained getting chipped by the tight end and just using that as momentum, right, propelling him right to where he needed to go, I thought that was really good. He's, like I said, he's always been a talented player. But it just seems like he's becoming a guy who really feels like he belongs.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing.
And here's the other part of this to wrap this up. He's a prime example. Kamele Correa is a prime example. Dennis Kelly, we've mentioned. There are others of those depth players that you don't really think much about that John mm-hmm. Robinson finds mm-hmm. that all of a sudden when you get to this point of the year where you have some bodies going down to injury, you're like, hey, John Robinson's pretty good at yeah. finding those diamonds yeah. in the rough that teams might look over.
13 snaps, 2.5 sacks.
That's pretty good right there.
That's productive.
That's exactly what you're looking for. He's Teron Davenport. I am Chase McCabe. Calvin Smith behind the glass. When we come back, we're going to talk about our favorite guy, not named Derrick Henry, on this show, A.J. Brown. We'll do that next. Chase and TD, ESPN, 1025 The Game.
This is A.J. Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Thank you, Timmy. Welcome back in. Chase and TD, ESPN, 1025 The Game. Follow us on Twitter at 1025 The Game. Teron Davenport, Chase McCabe, Calvin Smith here with you as very, very, very excited for one final regular season game for the Tennessee Titans. Win and you're in. It's that simple. There are other scenarios where they could lose and still make the playoffs, but TD, you want to take care of business.
Yeah,
take care
man.
Of your own business.
You handle your BI, man. That's what a grown man does, and this team would like to consider themselves a group of grown men,
yep.
right, and grown women. In the organization as well. So as a unit, they want to move forward and handle their business. Now, one of the guys that is a pure 100% unadulterated grown man is number 11. Just so happens that
he's a grown blank man.
Basically. Basically.
That's what he is.
And it just so happens that number 11 made a lot of Christmases go yesterday.
He did.
You know, it seemed like every time I would pick up my phone, I saw, like, when I get a notification, I'm looking, and it's A.J. Brown retweeting a fan who – and these kids, like, they're not their day. Their life was made mm-hmm. opening up that gift, and number 11's on there. So it just goes to show you what this guy is doing as far as putting himself in the heart of these fans.
So I was off Monday, but I listened, and I heard the – I'm going to say heated. I mean, it got heated for a little bit, but good in a good way. You guys hugged it out at the end, but
there was no reason to hug it out. Two men could talk.
I know.
And not need to hug it out.
But I thought it was a good discussion because mm-hmm. they haven't had that go-to top-tier elite, whatever word you want to use, receiver.
Consistently
since D-Mace. Yeah. And I was with you on that. I think Derek... I do think he had more production in Baltimore because that's how it was set up. But you look at his production that he had here, considering the type of offense that they ran, pretty darn good for a fourth-round pick that was a special teams guy before they gave him a chance. So
believe it or not, 4 100-yard seasons here, 4 in Baltimore. If I'm not mistaken, his career high was 1,300 yards. Right here.
Yeah. You may be right on that.
But I get what you're saying, and you're right.
And A.J. Brown, right. That the whole premise of the discussion was, can A.J. Brown be that guy
right.
consistently?
And while we're on the topic of 1,000-yard receivers, 73 yards, yep. it puts him in that – what's a good word? That caliber, that it's an achievement, a 1,000-yard receiver season.
And you were
season.
Right about – Derek Mason, 1303, 2003 with the Titans.
I know my D-Mace, man. Oh, yeah. Listen, I'm not going to hold you. I told Chris Sanders, I told a few of the other receivers we've had on the show, and D-Mason is one of them too. Look, man, back in college, Street and Smith's, Athlon,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting my razor blade, I'm cutting out the 8x10. I had D-Mace with that big strap yeah. on his nose. I had that on the wall, man. You know, yeah. so I'm always going to ride for 85, man. But it's time to ride for 11. And I tell you, when you look at, as we touched on earlier in the show, this past game is truly a sign of the respect the league has for him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because Marshon Lattimore doesn't go to cat coverage with just anybody. Right? They had him. He was traveling from jump with him, you know, and the fact that they were going back and forth. And even as Tannehill said, AJ was winning on the backside of, and that's a key that just clicked to me that didn't click before. AJ on the backside. You know what that tells you, right? A good amount of the calls Corey Davis was the you know the primary read, because most of the time they're on opposite sides. You know what I mean? So that's a good sign, right, that they're working to get Corey involved. But look, man, the fact of the matter is this guy, A.J. Brown, maximizes every opportunity he gets to carry the football. I asked Mike Vrabel.
He did it on that rush.
Right. I asked Mike Vrabel about Tannehill's high completion percentage and the high average yards per attempt. One of the things he went right to is the yards after catch that these guys are able to get. Not to take anything from Tannehill, because it takes accuracy to hit a guy in stride the way that they do. But it just goes to show you, like I said, the level of respect that this league has for A.J. Brown.
Yeah, look, to just take you behind the scenes, if you've never been on a football sideline, not just NFL, but any type of football sideline, anytime the Titans offense is out there, the opposing sideline, there's somebody going, watch out for 11.
Yeah, yeah, they're keying on it.
That's respect.
They're keying on it.
They know you have to watch out on every play. You're not going to throw to him on every play, but you have to be ready because you don't know what they're going to do. It's just like with 22 with Derrick Henry.
Right.
I mean, defenses are going to load the box because they know you got to stop 22.
Well, here's the thing. This week's opponent is the Houston Texans, right? Last week, Sean Payton, he said, hey, yeah, you know, A.J. Brown is a guy that we looked at heavily.
Yeah.
The NFL better be glad that they don't have that guy to put on the backside of Michael Thomas. Oof. But just, again, it shows you. But then this week, the conference call with Bill O'Brien, guess what happens? A head coach speaks very complimentary of A.J. Brown. Check it out. This is what we got.
Just a big, strong, physical, good route runner, really good hands, fast. I mean, he's got it all. He's one of the best players we've played against.
Y'all scouted A.J. Brown coming out of college, right, if I'm remembering correctly?
Yes.
Can you tell from that scouting to now to, you know, how much maybe he's grown as a rookie?
I would say, you know, I just think what he's done is just a fantastic accomplishment to be able to come into this league. I think it's very difficult to play receiver as a rookie in this league. And so to do what he's done shows that he's got a great work ethic and he's got really good playing strength. He's got a lot of great attributes to be a great wide receiver, which is what he is.
Couple things to take note of. Bill O'Brien says it's great the way he's able to be successful right away as a rookie receiver. Also pointed out the work ethic. What's really interesting to me is that he's not here in the building to know that for sure, but it's true.
Right.
You look at what he and Rob Moore, because A.J. coming in, I remember talking to him, you know, about being able to be more sudden at the line of scrimmage. What is he doing to get better there? I remember talking to him about not doing too much at the top of the route. What does he and Rob Moore work on almost every single practice? That. So here it is. Bill O'Brien doesn't have a clue what's going on, but sees that improvement. And let me be clear, doesn't have a clue what's going on at St. Thomas Sports Park.
Right.
But is able to see that improvement. That stands out to me.
Yeah, we had Joe Moorhead on, the head coach at Mississippi State.
Okay.
He obviously coached against A.J. Brown when A.J. Brown was at Ole Miss.
Wanted him too.
Yeah. Very, very, very complimentary of him, and said, I wish I had had a chance. He was obviously at Penn State at the time, but he goes, I wish I had had a chance to recruit him because I'd love to have him in Starkville. But he could not say enough nice things about A.J. Brown.
Yeah. A.J. Brown had two of his best games against Mississippi State.
Yeah.
In fact, his first really I'm on the map game was against Mississippi State in 17, I believe it was.
Yeah.
He did all the damage playing as an outside receiver too. You know, so it just all jibes correctly.
Speaking of players that we always talk about on this show real quick, the F-150, it went to the shop last week. Mm-hmm. Did not, you know, didn't play. Derrick Henry, I mean. How we think that's going to help him?
Yeah, it got a little tune-up, you know, make sure all the PSI is right on all four tires, you know what I'm saying, change the spark plugs, and I think it's going to be good to go.
Yeah.
Right? According to him, he spoke today, and he said that He's going to be good to go. He said the rest was really a good help. And he said it's always positive when you get the rest. You saw him in some of the videos I posted, a little more explosive, doing a little bit more. Here's the key, full participant.
Yep.
No worries. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I think so too. And looking back on it, I know we talked about this last week of do you play him? And we're like, yeah, don't sit him unless you absolutely have to. Once the Texans won on Saturday, I think Mike Vrabel looked at that and went, you know what? Let's give him the week off because I know I'm going to need him in week 17. Yeah. So let's give him the week off. So I don't hate the decision. Glad that Derrick Henry is doing well. Speaking of another player that has been doing well for the Tennessee Titans, we will talk about this individual on the offense when we come back. It is Chase and TD on ESPN 102.5 The Game.